The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Happy Tuesday. I'm Jeff Munn in for Brad. I always feel compelled to do this because some of you may not. I mean, a lot of you may not know who I am. Radio voice of Arizona State women's basketball, stadium announcer for Phoenix Rising FC, always in search of the next gig. And the gig is here today, and we're glad to be with you on the Brad Sessmatt Show, sports360az.com. We partner with azcentralsports.com. And this is the one of the great things about sports, and I guess you could say the same thing about news, is that you can come in some days or look a day ahead and think, well, it'll be kind of quiet, and what are we going to do? And then all of a sudden, the sports world hands you things to talk about, and we get a couple of them right off the top. Let me tell you about the show today. Steve Gilbert, the outstanding writer for MLB.com, who covers the D-backs, will be with us to talk about the club's roller coaster ride that is now trending back up. Nobody remembers when they lost 13-15, which is a good thing. They had a great weekend in Colorado. Paul Goldschmidt's hitting the ball again. Isn't it amazing? Do you see a correlation between Paul Goldschmidt hitting and the D-backs winning? That, to me, now, that'll get me into an argument that we can take up at a later time, but I do think the two kind of go together. Also, we will discuss more about the NBA draft. I heard some chatter over the weekend that really got me to thinking about maybe DeAndre Ayton isn't the concrete pick, the lock is what a term I was looking for, that everybody thinks it is. But we'll discuss that in detail. And we have some other news and notes out of the Cardinals, which we'll get to in a second. There is some news involving Phoenix Rising FC, who will be home tomorrow night against Las Vegas over at the Phoenix Rising Soccer Complex. But let's get started with the news of the day. It is brought to you by Sagicor Now. Brad talks quite often on this show, and I catch the show. By the way, when Brad does the show, he does not wear headsets. He has little earplugs, but I wear the headsets. Sagicor Now, life insurance. We don't think much about life insurance when we're 20, 30, 40. When you get to be my age, you think about it more often. Well, the time to think about it is when you're just starting out, when you're just starting a family and you're starting a career and you start to think to yourself a little bit when you're holding that young one in your arms, what happens if I'm not able to provide? Well, Sagicor Now can help ease your mind and the minds of your loved ones with the kind of protection and the kind of security that you need going forward to make certain that if something happens to you, your loved ones are taken care of. All you got to do is go to SagicorNow.com and find out all about it. It's very easy, and I think you'll find, if you have not done it already, that it's a very good investment of your time. And it's an investment also, as I say quite often, in your peace of mind. And we thank Sagicor Now for their support of our program. Before we get into the baseball, a note that came in this morning, ESPN's Adam Schefter, and I guess he changed his words a little bit, and I am going to get our good friend here, Eric Sorensen, in on the e-cam in a minute. But originally, the story came out this morning that David Johnson, Cardinal running back, the term that Adam Schefter used was he is going to hold out during the mandatory minicamp in hopes of getting a new contract with the Arizona Cardinals. Now, in the time since, now I saw a later tweet. Yes, I'm drinking coffee this morning. I saw a later tweet that said the term was he is skipping the mini camp. Either way, he's not going to be at camp. It's a mandatory camp. He's not going to be there because he wants a new contract. You want to call it a holdout? Call it a holdout.
Verbiage.
Yeah, that's all it is.
It's verbiage, just, money. That's all it is.
Now, are we surprised at this news? I have to be honest with you, Eric. When I saw it, I thought, here we go.
David Johnson should hold out.
Yeah, I mean, his own organization.
He's making $1.8 million a year.
His own organization, from Bruce Arians to the new coaching staff, Steve Keim. Why am I getting so mixed up on names today? Steve Wilk, right?
Correct. And Steve Keim.
I don't normally make excuses. But
you had a long flight last night.
I flew cross country yesterday after flying to the east on Saturday, so I'm not sure what time zone I'm in.
You're okay.
But his own organization has proclaimed him the best running back in the game.
Pay him.
Right. Well, if you're going to say that, and I don't blame you for saying it because It's true. I don't care if running backs maybe aren't the prime item they used to be in the NFL. You still got to pay the guy.
And David Johnson isn't just a great football player, man. He's a great ambassador for the organization.
That's the other thing. He's
the quote-unquote face of the franchise.
He's
wink,
proven
wink.
To be. He's kind of like – he's Larry Fitzgerald-like.
He is.
Isn't that a good way to describe it?
I mean, Larry Fitz is the face of the franchise, but David Johnson has to be the future face of the franchise.
And future. I would think Michael Bidwell's got to look at it and say, okay, this is the guy when Larry's ready to shut it down. This is the guy we go with going forward as the person we put out in the community as the face of the franchise. But because of that, because he's a good guy and all that stuff, I don't see this becoming an antagonistic, a lot of tension and anger between the two sides. I really don't. I don't think it'll get to that. I could be wrong. I could be way wrong. But I don't think that this is going to become acrimonious. That was the term I was looking for, but definitely worth watching. Now, let me transition to the D-backs. They got a huge win last night, and, they played the Pirates. And the Pirates are not that bad a club. I was just talking with a friend of mine before we did the show, came on the show. The Pirates, of course, traded Andrew McCutchen away in the winter to San Francisco. And he was a very popular player in the Steel City. They've faded a bit of late. They're now two games under 500, 7.5 out in the Central. But I think they're still ahead of what many people, even in Pittsburgh, had them projected to do. This ball club, it's a very good team. They hit the ball very well. They probably could stand some improvements in the pitching staff, and I wonder if they're going to be out in the market looking for pitching. All right, so last night, they hold a 5-0 lead into the bottom of the seventh inning. In the top of the seventh, Josh Harrison had been hit by a pitch thrown by Braden Shipley. From all accounts, there was nothing intentional about it. Harrison was not having all that great a night at the plate. He was 0-for-2. So there was nothing intentional in hitting him with a pitch. I'm also told that in that same half inning, another Pirate hitter was brushed back a bit by a pitch that came inside on him. In the bottom of the seventh, Joe Musgrove, who was really having a stellar night to that point, hit Chris Owings, and it triggered a 5-run rally in the seventh that tied the game. The D-backs scored 4 runs in the bottom of the eighth to win it 9-5. And this has reignited the debate about retaliation. Is it necessary to hit guys with pitches?
Especially money when you're talking about the Pirates and the Diamondbacks.
Right.
This has been going on the last few years.
2014.
And it's sort of becoming must-see when these teams play simply because you know something is going to happen. It's not just going to be your standard 9-inning regular season baseball game.
Well, here's my thought on this. And I was in a plane last night. I didn't see the game, but I've read as many stories as I could read this morning on what took place. So my thought is this. The Pirates, if you remember in 2014, they hit Paul Goldschmidt with a pitch in a game in August of that year. Goldschmidt suffered a broken hand. His season was done. The next night, the D-backs threw at and hit Andrew McCutchen. Now, they never admitted it was intentional, but you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out that it was. Tony La Russa, who was the chief baseball officer of the D-backs at the time and a guy who had had a history as a manager of seeking retaliation, said, and his quote was very direct, "If you are going to pitch inside and you don't have command, you're going to pay a price. You must have command if you're going to pitch inside." The Pirates pitch inside a lot. They hit guys a lot. So last night looked to me like the Pirates got a little taste of their own medicine, and they didn't react well to it. You have a 5-0 lead. If you want to retaliate, if you want to hit a guy, there's places to do it. We can talk later on in the show about Torey Lovullo's comments about it. But to me, if you're going to do that, you better have a bigger lead than 5-0 if you're going to do it that night, or you do it the next night when the first time the guy comes up. You find a time to say, okay, we'll pick a guy, that's it, and it's settled. But the way the Pirates handled it, and obviously they started their own demise by triggering this rally by hitting Chris Owings and getting the Diamondbacks all fired up. They took a situation where they had a 5-0 lead against a team that's playing really good baseball, and the Pirates have been scuffling, and they just disintegrated. So we're getting into a little bit later in the show. We'll talk about this, and obviously in our next segment we'll discuss a whole bunch of things D-backs related with our friend Steve Gilbert. But I'm old school. I admit it. I'm an old school baseball guy. I don't think there's anything wrong with retaliation. Where you do it, how you do it, I think is the key. And maybe that was the problem last night, that Joe Musgrove should not have been the guy to go out and find a guy to hit. Clint Hurdle said he was just sticking up for his teammates, and that's all well and good. But you got to find the proper place at the proper time, and maybe that was not the proper time. Who knows? In any event, we'll continue the discussion about baseball. What is going on with this Diamondbacks team? Is this a trend that can be sustained like it looked like it would be in April? We'll discuss that and a whole lot of other things, including last week's draft, which hasn't gotten much attention, with MLB.com D-backs writer Steve Gilbert. He'll join us next on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Glad to have you with us on a Tuesday. Time to visit with our friend Steve Gilbert from MLB.com. He's the D-backs beat writer for MLB.com. If you love baseball as much as I do, you should be on MLB.com every day because you get lots of great content of the writing variety from people like Steve. And there's a lot of things we could talk about this morning, my friend, but I'm going to start with last night only in this sense. It seems to me just, and I was not able to see the game, but from everything I read, it seemed like the Pirates' timing in wanting to retaliate for Josh Harrison getting hit just seemed to be ill-timed. There had to have been a better time or a better situation for them to try to, if they're going to try to retaliate, to do so.
Yeah, Jeff, that was it was a real head scratcher for me last night. I understand, though, you know, the baseball code and whatnot, but they had a perfect opportunity. Had they retired the first two batters in that inning, they could have actually hit the guy that they were most angry with, Braden Shipley, who had thrown the pitch that hit Harrison and that nearly hit Meadow. So it was a head scratcher to hit the leadoff guy. You're hanging on to a lead. The Diamondbacks looked like they were playing pretty listless baseball at that point. And it just seemed like they woke him up for no good reason. I know I saw the quotes from the Pirates this morning about how they felt that wasn't the turning point in the game, but I think they're the only ones that feel that wasn't the turning point in the game, because it sure seemed like it to everybody else.
Well, there's one thing, and we'll obviously move on to more pressing topics, but the Pirates, traditionally under Clint Hurdle, they pitch inside a great deal. There was an incident in 2014. Paul Goldschmidt got hit in the hand, broke his hand, finished his season. And the next night, the D-backs retaliated and hit Andrew McCutchen. And Tony La Russa at the time said, if you're going to pitch inside, you better have command. So to me, what happened last night sounded like the Pirates got a little spoonful of their own medicine.
Yeah, and I guess Harrison's been hit a bunch this year, and they'd had enough of that. And, you know, that's their perspective. And I think that's kind of one of the dangers in all the hit-by-pitch things, is that every team feels it's justified in what it is that they do. And, you know, you're dealing with an object traveling 90-plus miles an hour, and it's a dangerous thing. So everybody feels justified when these things tend to happen, and it's always interesting to hear the different sides and the different perspectives. Both sides always seem to be so convinced that they're correct.
Steve Gilbert, MLB.com, Diamondbacks beat writer, joins us. All right, this team's playing better. Goldschmidt is hitting, and I think the two are definitely related to one another. What has changed for Paul Goldschmidt?
You know, I talked with him a little bit in Denver. I think the only thing that's really changed for him is that his swing has gotten a little shorter. When he struggles, you know, he said it's obvious that his swing gets a little long. And it seems like it's such a simple thing, but it's not as easy to change as just saying, oh, hey, my swing is long, I'm going to have to, you know, shorten it up. It's a muscle memory thing. It's something that you just slip into at the plate. So he worked very hard. He worked tirelessly for many weeks trying to figure it out and try to get it right. He said to me that he had not been this hot that he could remember for a 4 or 5 game stretch. That was just kind of incredible.
Do you get that when you say that he worked very, very hard, and that's very typical of Goldie? It reminds me of what Kirk Gibson dealt with when Justin Upton had his struggles, that they were almost telling him, get out of the batting cage, take a breather, step back, take a breath. It sounds like maybe this might have been prolonged because Goldschmidt was grinding so hard on it.
Well, it's hard to know what the right balance is there. He's usually got a pretty good feel on the mental side of things and kind of handling those things and not overworking. But it's tough when you're the guy and everybody expects you to be the guy and you're not. It's got to be a very there's a very pressurized environment for that, and a lot of people you feel like you're letting down, particularly when they went through that tough stretch where they lost all those games in May. I think before that, he was in much better spirits because, you know, his biggest thing was they were winning. But I think when they were losing and he was unable to help them or contribute or get things turned around, that was a big deal.
Steve Gilbert of MLB.com, Diamondbacks beat writer, joining us on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Jeff Munn for Brad. You were just in Denver, and I was just making a comment before we came on today. If any team in the National League West ought to really be kicking themselves, it's the Rockies. The Diamondbacks lose 13 of 15. The Rockies at that moment should have put some room between themselves and the rest of the division. And right now, they're going the other way. They're falling back in the standings. So my question to you is, you were up there over the weekend. Are you getting a sense, or are people getting a sense, that there is a frustration level growing within the Rockies right now?
Well, I think there's no question about it. They invested over $100 million in their bullpen, and that's been the thing that's cost them games, and certainly did against the Diamondbacks. So I think there is a lot of frustration. The guys they're counting on, like a Brian Shaw, has really, really struggled. And boy, he came unraveled in that game against the Diamondbacks. I think it was Saturday's game against the Diamondbacks, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, even a guy like Wade Davis, who's been so good over the years, has struggled here recently, too. So for them, I think there's a lot of frustration because you're right. They had a chance to really kind of jump ahead of the Diamondbacks. And didn't take advantage of it. They had a chance to jump away from the Dodgers and really didn't take advantage of it. So it's going to be an interesting division. Suddenly the Diamondbacks look, you know, unbeatable again like they were in April. But then, you know, you saw them in May, and they seem very beatable. And the Dodgers that looked dead in April are now right back in the thick of things, too. So it's probably going to be one of those typical crazy NL West races that goes right down to the end.
And because of that, obviously the Dodgers always figure to be in the middle of trade discussions, and they've been linked to Manny Machado a great deal. Personally, I think, without getting sarcastic or silly, I just don't see how the D-backs can compete against the Dodgers or the Cubs for Machado's services. Now, Nick Cafardo wrote in his Sunday column in the Boston Globe, he linked the D-backs to Jay Happ in Toronto. And that raises a question to me. Would Mike Hazen be more apt to look at pitching in relation to a deadline deal than trying to get another bat?
You know, that's a great question. And I still think that they would probably lean, depending on how comfortable they feel about Souza coming back and A.J. Pollock coming back, I would think that they would still lean towards pitching because it just always feels like you never have enough of it. I know we're sitting here now, and I get tweets from fans asking, oh, who's going to be out of the rotation when Shelby Miller comes back? Who's going to be out of the rotation when Robbie Ray comes back? Well, those guys aren't back yet. And lots happens between in baseball, especially when it comes to pitching, whether it's injuries, whether it's ineffectiveness. One minute, Zach Godley looks like he's, you know, pitching for his life in the rotation, and then he goes out and has a great game, and now, you know, who else is going to be out of the rotation? So I think you can always err on the side of you can never have too much pitching, and I think that they've seen the potential of this offense when Goldschmidt is hitting. He really changes the whole dynamics of it. So I think if they feel like they're going to get A.J. Pollock back, if they feel like Steven Souza is going to be back and contribute like he had, like they expected him to, I think they might lean towards pitching.
You covered the draft last week here in the War Room, and the D-backs got, and this kind of just flew under the radar, at least as far as I can tell, in the local media, but they got really high marks on their draft. I read online, and I believe it was on MLB.com, that they either were like considered third or fourth in terms of the prospects they were able to select. And that's a rarity over the last several years for this organization. And it's a necessary because, as we know, the farm system needs to be replenished. What was the sense you got from Hazen's staff about how they did in the draft?
Well, they felt really good about what they did in the draft. It felt like they balanced out the system a little bit. Last year, early on, they took some advanced college bats, and this year they went with a prep shortstop. So I think what they're trying to do, and then got a bunch of right-handed arms in there. So I think they were trying to continue to build that depth and balance things out. They also got last year, Pavin Smith and Drew Ellis on the corners, first and third, that were advanced bats, as well as Varsho behind the plate. So I think they wanted to get some more up the middle guys and also get some, feel free to pick some more high school guys, which they did. So again, it always takes years to sort out the draft, but, they certainly felt good about their haul.
You mentioned Smith, and he's always been in that top 100 on MLB Pipeline, top 100 prospects in the game, I say always, since he was drafted a year ago. To me, I look at him, and I see he is a first baseman, so I automatically put two and two together and say, okay, this is a guy they're looking at as insurance if Paul Goldschmidt walks. We would almost assume the club will pick up the option for 19, but after 19, if Goldschmidt leaves, then we have our first baseman going forward.
Yeah, I think it's tough in the draft to forecast or draft for need. So they felt like he was the best guy available to them last year. Where were they picking? I think seventh. And so they felt like he's an advanced hitter. They liked him. But I think that teams can get into trouble and can find themselves in trouble if they start drafting for need when it comes to baseball, just because it's so unpredictable what's going to happen and how guys are going to develop, particularly if you're looking at high school guys. So I think you take the best available, and if it ends up being you got three first basemen or three shortstops, you can always and they're all three good, you can always trade them and build up other aspects of your system.
Steve Gilbert of MLB.com, Diamondbacks beat writer. All right, all things, let's just boil it down to this. As you said, it looks like the makings of another crazy division race in the NL West, where four, maybe if the Padres got really silly, five teams might be in the hunt. The D-backs just saw the Giants and the Rockies. They won't see a lot of the Dodgers the rest of the way, and that's another thing. Their schedule actually works way in their favor, because the 12 games they played against the Dodgers were against the bad Dodgers, not the Dodgers the way they are now. But as you get a sense in the clubhouse, Steve, are they more concerned about the Dodgers? I'm going to leave the Rockies out of this, because they are a disappointment. Is it the Dodgers or the Giants that concerns Torey Lovullo, his staff, or Mike Hazen and his staff the most?
I think that – give me that question again there, Jeff.
Yeah, which team would concern them the most as a threat to them, knocking them out of first?
I got to think it's the Dodgers. They won't say that. I got to think it's the Dodgers. Just because of the fact that you mentioned they do have prospects in their system if they do want to go out and acquire somebody. They do have money, although they are trying to stay under that luxury tax. The Rockies – and maybe it's just kind of, just a little bit of bias after having seen them play so poorly this weekend. They did just seem like they have a bunch of holes there. And the Giants, they're hanging in there, but, they're older, and I just don't feel as strongly about them as I have in the past. So to me, it's still the Dodgers. I know they've had a lot of injuries, but I do think that they have the ability, if they need to add somebody at the deadline there, that they can do that.
Yeah, and in most of the attention is on Machado, but I would think they too, with the injuries to their pitching staff, and they've survived it to a certain degree so far, but with all the question marks in their pitching staff, I would think when you look at the deadline, they're going to be the ones, they're also going to be out there looking at a J-Hap or maybe somebody else to bring in, because some of those guys, you can't expect them to contribute when they do get healthy, because it might take them a while to get back to form.
Yeah, they're going to have to do something. And they're in a situation where they draw, well over 3 million fans.
Yeah.
And they're poised to win now. And I know it's great to have prospects and to set yourself up for the future, but these chances to compete don't come around very often. And I think that they're going to have to, at some point here, go all in and push some chips into the middle of the table, so to speak, to use a poker analogy, and go get themselves some pitching to help out with that depth.
That leads me to my last question. We know that there has been a win now mentality from Ken Kendrick on down with the D-backs for quite some time. And they really didn't have to take the all-in mentality on the J.D. Martinez trade because it only cost them a couple of A-ball prospects. But given that they're in first place at the moment, I would get the sense that from the owner on down, the directive to Mike Hazen is go all in if you have to. I mean, I don't know what that means, but that still is the feeling within the D-backs camp, right? That if they have a chance to go for it, they got to go for it.
Well, I think they'll go for it to a point. I think, you know, Mike's been real hesitant to delve too far into that system. You know, I think probably one of the best guys they traded away was Bonda in the Sousa deal, obviously right. Drury as well. But in these other deals, as you pointed out, with J.D. Martinez, there's a couple minor leaguers here. You know, they just traded away a couple minor leaguers for John Jay.
Right.
I mean, eventually these guys are going to, you know, you trade enough of guys that are quote-unquote average prospects, some of them are going to hit for other teams. You know, the other teams are going to hit right on these guys, and you're going to lose somebody of some real value. But I think there's still that all-in mentality money-wise. I'm not sure that they're all-in in terms of emptying out the farm system quite yet. I still think they're trying to build a sustainable model going forward, and that's got to have to include building up a farm system a little bit rather than depleting it right now.
That's why I think it's going to be fascinating to watch these next 7 weeks as to how Mike Hazen approaches this. Steve, always appreciate the time. Good to talk to you, my friend. Travel safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
Jeff, always a pleasure.
Steve Gilbert, MLB.com. And they have so many great writers at MLB.com, and the content there is terrific, and Steve, of course, is there day-to-day, and as we said, covered the draft. So if you haven't checked out his content, it's certainly worth a look at MLB.com, or you can find it at dbacks.com as well. We'll turn our attention to the NBA draft in our next segment, and given the way the game is played right now in the NBA, is DeAndre Ayton the best fit for the Suns with the first overall pick? We'll debate that next on the Brad Sesmatch Show. All right, back on a Tuesday, the Brad Sesmatch Show, and we mentioned in our first segment that I was doing a little cross-country traveling. I just got to get this in. Spent 36 hours in Hempton, Maine, which is just outside of Bangor. My grandniece graduated from high school, and I was thrilled to be able to get up there and take part in it. The weather. Okay, I'm going to get this out of the way. The overnight lows in Hempton were 45 degrees both nights, and the highs got up somewhere, just touched 70 degrees. Now, it will get warmer and more humid, and there'll be more bugs and what have you in Maine as they get into the summer months. But man, oh man, I wish I could have bottled that weather and brought it home with me. And when I got off the plane last night at Sky Harbor, we had a 3-hour layover in Philadelphia. And the one good thing about it was I was able to have a Geno's steak. They have Geno's steaks in the Philadelphia airport. So I got me a cheesesteak with Cheese Whiz. That's the way you're supposed to do it in Philadelphia. And when we got off the plane last night, the flight attendants were remarking about, brace yourself, it's 102. I'm like, well, come on, I live here. Who cares? Anyway, let's talk a little basketball, something that might make us think of cooler weather because that's the time of year that it's played. I had a discussion with a friend of mine about the number one overall pick and the Suns, and I just said, do you think it's a given that it's Ayton? And my friend said, no. And he talked a lot about Marvin Bagley, who, of course, is from the Valley, just played his one and only year at Duke. And the point he made was this. The way the NBA game is played today, Bagley suits that style of play better than Arizona's DeAndre Ayton. Now, I don't think that makes it a given, you know, obviously, that they're looking hard at Marvin Bagley. And I don't agree with that contention in the sense that Ayton's skill set is much more diverse than your typical big man. And Eric Sorensen, if you want to get in on this and bat this around with me for a moment, which is more of a baseball term than a basketball term, the point that I made to my friend was this. You might be right in the sense that Marvin Bagley's game suits the run down and shoot the first three you can get NBA right now, But the last time I did the show, we had Tim Kempton on as a guest, and he was lamenting the fact that the NBA was starting to kind of morph back into isolation basketball, which was where they were in the early 2000s. It was not very aesthetically pleasing. And as a result, the NBA tweaked the rules. Jerry Colangelo headed up a committee that did, among other things, they legalized the zone. They instituted the defensive three-second violation. They had the charge circle right underneath the hoop. And it did. That, coupled with Mike D'Antoni's innovations with the Suns, really got the NBA jump-started again offensively. So my question is this, and Eric, if you want to comment on this, I say you still go with Ayton because you don't know what the NBA is going to look like in 2 or 3 years or 4 years. We might see this game revert back to a more balanced structure where the big man is still once again becomes a really vital part of a team's offense and defense.
And DeAndre Ayton money is a player that spent most of the year at U of A guarding 6'8 and 6'9
right.
Pac-12 power forwards on
right.
the perimeter, which is only going to help him, I think, when he gets to the NBA. I mean, I'm still stunned that DeAndre Ayton's been playing basketball for 5 years. I mean, just think about
the way
that.
He handles the ball, just the ball handling. He's very smooth
and comfortable. I mean,
look
at that picture.
Right.
Look at that. That's 1 year at U of A weight program.
Right.
1 year.
But I marvel at Ayton not because of his size, not because of the dunking ability. It is kind of fun to see him step back and shoot a three, and he's very successful doing it. But the things that appeal to me the most about Ayton is his ability to handle the ball. Some big guys, and we know this, they handle the ball like this with mm-hmm. their fist. Ayton looks very, very smooth handling the ball, putting it on the floor, passing. I've always said Hakeem Olajuwon and Charles Barkley were the two best I ever saw at passing out of a double team.
So good.
Ayton has that same kind of potential.
He does.
And in today's NBA, is that important? Maybe not. But again, I get a sense that this game is going to go another direction gradually over the next couple of years. And I think you're going to see teams, they're not going to be as dependent on the three-pointer. I think you're going to see some teams kind of take the game back inside a bit. And that only makes DeAndre Ayton, to me, all the more valuable to the Suns, given that the game could very go that direction.
And last year at U of A, I found it pretty interesting that he averaged 20 points and 11 rebounds as a freshman. He mm-hmm. was the Pac-12 Player of the Year. And they really didn't run a lot of plays for him because their guards were so ball dominant between Trier and Raleigh Alkins. So can you imagine an offense that actually utilizes their post player who has the ability to step outside and shoot, I don't know about NBA threes yet, but he can take other bigs outside
exactly
and open up the lane for the Josh Jacksons, for the Devin Bookers, for the TJ Warrens. If the Suns take him, he is going to make every other player on the team on the floor better.
Now, is Marvin Bagley going to be an exciting player?
Absolutely.
Yes, no doubt. Yes, but you just said it.
And Luka Doncic, I think, is going to be a really good pro.
Right, but they already have, the Suns have players kind of that fit.
Yes.
The Josh Jackson who penetrates, the
yes.
Devin Booker who can shoot from outside and penetrate.
But what don't they have?
They don't have a really solid big man.
Ding, 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 ding.
And I agree with you. I think the thing that makes DeAndre Ayton so appealing is not just he can play the low post with his back to the basket and he can back down defenders in the lane and do all the traditional things a five can do.
But he's not really, like, the NBA man is becoming positionless,
right.
as they say. Like, what is LeBron James?
You have to have five guys.
It doesn't matter. The Warriors are essentially just five interchangeable pieces.
I'll take it a step further. Magic Johnson, his rookie year, was kind of that way.
No doubt.
You remember the famous story about
sure.
the clincher in Philadelphia?
Oh, yeah. He played all five positions.
Right, and he could and be very successful at it, very, very good at it. And it's the same thing with Ayton. Ayton strikes me as the kind of player that he can operate at the high post. He can bring his defender out with him. If he's double-teamed in the low post, he can get rid of the ball. And he can get the ball to guards that, in the case of the Suns, they have guys who can penetrate, who can shoot, who can get open. You know, I always hear Cotton Fitzsimmons in my head saying, When somebody's double-teamed, that means somebody's open. And he's right. He was right. It's a very basic thing, but it's true. If you are double-teamed in the post, that means one of those penetrators, a Jackson, a Booker, is open and can shoot from outside. Booker's more the likely candidate for that. I get it about Bagley. Bagley is going to be a fantastic player. Doncic could be a fantastic player in the NBA. I hate to say it, but I still have that lingering question mark about players that come over from Europe. Some have succeeded, some haven't. It's the same thing, excuse me, when you talk about players who come over from Japan or Korea into Major League Baseball. They have dazzling stuff, but they don't all pan out, or players from Cuba, for that matter. You invest a lot of money in them. Same thing in the NBA. And I look, I'm not saying that Doncic won't be a good player. He could be very good. But there's always going to be a little bit of mystery about a player that comes from Europe. And as talented and as dazzling as Marvin Bagley is, I think for the team that sits at the number one spot, I just don't believe that he is the right fit. They already have players that kind of fit, maybe not to Marvin Bagley's degree, but they have that skill set. They need a five. They haven't really had one as potentially dominant as DeAndre Ayton. So I guess what we're saying is that next week they should still go DeAndre Ayton. So it's going to be you're going to hear a lot more discussion of this between now and next Thursday, rightly so. But, man, it's to me it's still cut and dried. It should be DeAndre Ayton. More on David Johnson. We do have some news regarding Phoenix Rising FC, and it was made official earlier this morning. We'll get to all that and a few other items as we continue on the Brad Sesmatch Show. On a Tuesday, sports360az.com, azcentralsports.com. All right, a few little news and notes items as we wrap up on a Tuesday here on the Brad Sesmatch Show. I'm Jeff Munn. Radio voice of ASU women's basketball, stadium announcer for Phoenix Rising FC. That's one of the notes we want to get to as we're in for Brad today. It is now official. Patrice Cardion is leaving Phoenix Rising FC. They released a statement earlier this morning that he is taking a position with one of the clubs in the Egyptian Premier League. This sounds like it is a tremendous opportunity for Patrice, who's done a very nice job since taking over midway through last season, got Phoenix Rising to a playoff berth in the United Soccer League, and they have been off to a very good start this year. Rick Shantz, who is the assistant to Patrice Cardion, will, according to the announcement today, finish out the season as head coach, and Berke Bakay, who is the owner of Phoenix Rising FC, was very glowing in his praise of Patrice Cardion. So this sounds like a Patrice is leaving with Phoenix Rising's blessing, and we wish Patrice the very best moving forward. Phoenix Rising plays tomorrow night at home against Las Vegas Lights FC at 7:30 at the Phoenix Rising Soccer Complex, and they also have a match Saturday night at home against the Tulsa Roughnecks. So and they haven't been home in a while. So if you've been wanting to get out and see Phoenix Rising tomorrow night, Saturday night would be a good time to do it. One little note before we go on to talk about David Johnson. We will delve into this a little bit later this week. But this is U.S. Open Golf Week. Tiger Woods said he's missed playing in it, and he's looking forward to getting out there on the course. Fox enters its third year televising this event. Boys, you got to get it right this time. You have got to get it right this time. The first 2 years that they've done the U.S. Open, there have been problems, flaws. They've tweaked things. They've changed people in the booth. I think this is their third year, 16, 17. Yeah. They really need to get this as close to perfect as they can get, because people are really starting to chirp about Fox and their inability to handle major championship golf correctly, which is odd to me because they can usually throw money at most things and make it work. But we'll see what happens. The news we got earlier this morning regarding David Johnson of the Arizona Cardinals, and Adam Schefter of ESPN made his initial report that he was holding out, and he changed the terminology to skipping the mandatory minicamp in hopes of getting a new contract with the Arizona Cardinals. Well, it's all just terminology. The basic is he's holding out. He's not showing up at minicamp because he wants a new deal. This has the earmarks of something that could get ugly, but I don't think it will, based on the kind of person David Johnson is. And certainly Michael Bidwell, Steve Keim, Steve Wilk, especially Michael Bidwell and Steve Keim, because they've been here, recognize the value of David Johnson. Look, friends, yeah, the NFL is not as dependent on running backs as it once was a long time ago. But that doesn't mean, like the NBA and big men, it doesn't mean you can live without a top-flight running back. You show me a contending team, and I'll show you a team that's got a solid running back or two. And the Cardinals have what many people in the NFL believe to be the best of the bunch in David Johnson, not just as a runner, but as a pass catcher, which in today's NFL is absolutely essential. So my gut feeling, and I'm not very close to it, but my gut feeling is this will not get nasty. It will not continue into training camp. I hope I'm right. I would be shocked if I was wrong. Is it something they're going to call him in a day and say, look, here's a new deal, sign it? No, I don't think so. I think they'll kind of let this week play out. But
they also have a brittle quarterback.
That's the other reason why you got to have a good running game.
You have to guess that Steve Wilks is going to run the ball quite a bit this year and protect Sam Bradford, because the backup could be Josh Rosen.
Well, let's just say it was Rosen.
An untested rookie?
I'm not sure I want him out there. Yeah, you just hit it. I just don't know if I want Rosen in a high-leverage situation facing blitz after blitz after blitz with six guys boring in on him, because
sure,
they don't respect the run at all. They expect Rosen to throw on every down.
And the Cardinals have had a problem staying balanced, obviously, when David Johnson has been hurt. So the key to success in this league is at least sort of staying balanced, although it is a pass-heavy league, as we've seen.
Yeah.
And David Johnson, as you mentioned, Munn, not only a really gifted runner, but an excellent receiver out of the backfield.
Yeah, no, okay, and that just leads me to a quick thought, get a thought from you. I don't see this becoming acrimonious, do you?
No.
I think they'll get it done. I think he's just telling them, hey, it's time.
And David Johnson loves it in the Valley.
Right.
Loves the Cardinals.
I don't see this getting
nasty. The
Cardinals
were the team that took a chance on him.
Absolutely.
Coming out of Northern Iowa. So there is, yeah, the feeling
absolutely
is mutual. So
I don't see it turning nasty. By the way, and I was just talking about Fox a minute ago. I'm going to get this into about their NFL coverage. I don't know why they haven't committed already to Bruce Arians as their Thursday night color analyst. I know, or did Bruce sign with CBS? Is he in? He must be under contract. But why they're not looking at Kurt Warner, why they're not looking at, if Bruce Arians hasn't signed, why they're not doing that, I don't know. Because if they're paying $2 billion or some, whatever figure it is, it starts with a B for this singular package of Thursday night football games.
And Arians did join CBS.
Did he join CBS?
He'll be in the booth.
Well,
yep.
CBS should put him in a booth. Why Fox hasn't just gone out and found somebody who has Fox attitude, I don't get it. I don't understand why they haven't done this yet. It's June, kids. Thursday night football is 3 months away. You got a guy in your stable as a play-by-play guy in Tom Brenneman who would be great on Thursday nights. Get him with some hard-edged commentator. Don't give me Tony Romo. I know he's under contract to another. Don't give me a guy like Romo, because Romo says things like when you say New England's going to the AFC Championship next week, he chimes in with, that'll be a big game, Jim. Thanks, Tony. I guess all those years in the NFL really paid off. Anyway, we appreciate all of our guests being with us today. We appreciate you being with us. Stick right here, sports360az.com. You get the latest on what's going on in all kinds of Arizona sports throughout the day. And we'll be right back here with a Wednesday edition of the Brad Sesmatch Show. See you tomorrow.